Praise the Lord for His Spirit that works in us and gives us what we need. I feel like I've been so richly fed already today that I don't know if I can handle much more. Keep your eye on the finish line. Looking forward. Having a goal. Thinking, what are the weights? What are the weights that hold me back? Such a blessing to be here already this morning. I want to give a special welcome to each one of our visitors here this morning. We're extra glad to have you with us. Those of you that have been gone, welcome back. So good to have each one here this morning. It's such a privilege to all be able to be together like this and worship the Lord. I'd like for you to think of a song for me just in your head. Hum a few bars maybe, or you can say the words if you want. Song, Precious Memories. Just sing it to yourself a little bit. Okay? Now we're going to switch gears. Think of the song, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. Sing just a few bars of that in your head to yourself. Okay? Now we're going to switch gears again. I want you to sing just a little bit of the song, Mary Had a Little Lamb. Okay, thank you. Now, it was clear from the expressions on your faces what you were feeling when you sang those songs to yourselves. Music is something that impacts us in ways we often don't even realize. It's an expression of our souls, and it's also a way to build. It's a way to build right expression and responses. So that the emotions that you had as you sang those songs, and like I said, I could see it in your faces. There was a lot of somber feelings with the song Precious Memories, nostalgia. With Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee, I saw brighter faces. And with the children's song, there was outright merriment. So there's different things that songs bring about in us. Why? Why does music affect us that way? Me simply saying some words to you would not have had that, your emotions would not have had that same reaction that they did in you humming those different songs to yourselves. We associate things with songs, whether it's memories or whether it's simple emotions. I'd like to talk about music today. And look at some of that, some of the things that music does for us, and the ways that we need to look at our music. Music can relax us. Often people use it as a study aid, have soft music playing in the background. Music can invigorate us. A driving song like, Redeemed How I Love to Proclaim It, Keep Your Eye on the Finish Line. Those are songs that invigorate us and give us renewed determination. Music can inspire us and lead us to change. Music can empathize with us. It can calm our fears and our disturbance. Music is also a memory trigger. It can trigger good memories, poor memories. When you hear a song, it may take you back to the first time you heard it and what was happening then. Or it may be that somebody special to you always sang this song and you think of them. Or it may simply be that this song simply puts you in a mood and you're not exactly sure why, but somewhere there was a trigger that this song brings forward. I'd like to title this message, The Song of the Redeemed. And I'd like to look at how a Christian should view music and how we should make music choices. Turn with me to Psalm 40. And we're going to look, first of all, so music in many ways is a very practical subject. And so we're going to speak about a lot of practical things. But I want to lay a doctrinal foundation here. And look at the new song that's talked about many times in the Bible. So we're going to read Psalm 40, verses 1 through 5. I waited patiently for the Lord, and he inclined unto me and heard my cry. He brought me up also out of an horrible pit, out of the miry clay, and set my feet upon a rock, and established my goings, and he hath put a new song in my mouth, even praise unto our God. Many shall see it, and fear, and shall trust in the Lord. Blessed is that man that maketh the Lord his trust, and respecteth not the proud, nor such as turn aside to lies. Many, O Lord my God, are thy wonderful works which thou hast done, and thy thoughts which are to usward. They cannot be reckoned up in order unto thee. If I would declare and speak of them, they are more than can be numbered. So here it talks about the new song. What is the new song? Turn to Psalm 96. We're going to read the entire psalm here. It talks about the new song again. And here it gives a little bit more, some indications what that new song might be. Oh, sing unto the Lord a new song. Sing unto the Lord, all the earth. Sing unto the Lord. Bless his name. Show forth his salvation from day to day. Declare his glory among the heathen, his wonders among all people. For the Lord is great and greatly to be praised. He is to be feared above all gods, for all the gods of the nations are idols. But the Lord made the heavens. Honor and majesty are before him. Strength and beauty are in his sanctuary. Give unto the Lord, O ye kindreds of the people. Give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due unto his name. Bring an offering and come into his courts. O worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness. Fear before him all the earth. Say among the heathen that the Lord reigneth. The world also shall be established that it shall not be moved. He shall judge the people righteously. Let the heavens rejoice, and let the earth be glad. Let the sea roar in the fullness thereof. Let the field be joyful, and all that is therein. Then shall all the trees of the wood rejoice before the Lord. For he cometh to judge the earth. He shall judge the world with righteousness, and the people with his truth. So here it talks again about the new song, and it gives some indication of what this new song might be and why we might want to sing it. Isaiah 42, turn over there with me yet. And here I believe we see an even clearer picture in Isaiah chapter 42, verses 5 through 12. Thus saith the God the Lord, thus saith God the Lord, he that created the heavens and stretched them out, he that spread forth the earth, and that which cometh out of it, he that giveth bread unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk therein. I, the Lord, have called thee in righteousness, and will hold thine hand, and will keep thee, and give thee for a covenant of the people, and for a light of the Gentiles, to open the blind eyes, to bring out the prisoners from the prison, and them that sit in darkness out of the prison house. I am the Lord, that is my name, and my glory will I not give to another, neither my praise to graven images. Behold, the former things are come to pass, and new things do I declare. Before they spring forth, I tell you of them. Sing unto the Lord a new song, and his praise from the end of the earth. Ye that go down to the sea, and all that is therein, the isles and the inhabitants thereof. Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift up their voice, the villages that Kedar doth inhabit. Let the inhabitants of the rocks sing. Let them shout from the top of the mountains. Let them give glory unto the Lord, and declare his praise in the islands. So again, we have the new song. What's the context of it? It's in the context of a prophecy of the coming of Christ and of his work. Now, if we go all the way back to Revelation, Revelation chapter 5, if you want to turn there with me, I'm just going to read a couple verses here. Revelation chapter 5, verses 8 and 9. And here it shows us what that new song is, what the work of Christ was. Revelation chapter 5, verse 8. And when he had taken the book, the four beasts and 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, having every one of them harps and golden vials full of odors, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sung a new song, saying, Thou art worthy to take the book and to open the seals thereof, for thou wast slain and hast redeemed us to God by thy blood out of every kindred and tongue and people and nation. The new song is a song of redemption. The new song is a song that's intensely personal to each Christian because it's what Christ has done for you brought you out of the miry pit. And now you sing a new song. It says you sing it before the Lamb. Worthy is the Lamb that was slain. Revelation chapter 14. I'm going to read a few more verses from here. Revelation chapter 14, verses 1 through 5. And I looked, and lo, a Lamb. A Lamb stood on the Mount Zion, and with him 144,000, having his Father's name, written in their foreheads. And I heard a voice from heaven, as the voice of many waters, and as the voice of a great thunder. And I heard the voice of harpers harping with their harps, and they sung, as it were, a new song before the throne and before the four beasts and the elders. And no man could learn that song but the 144,000, which were redeemed from the earth. Isn't that beautiful? The new song can only be sung by those who have experienced that redemption. These are they which were not defiled with women, for they are virgins. These are they which follow the Lamb whithersoever he goeth. These were redeemed from among men, being the first fruits unto God and to the Lamb. And in their mouth was found no guile, for they are without fault before the throne of God. And so here we have a continuation of the new song. It's a song of redemption. But what are we redeemed to? We're redeemed to purity, no guile, no fault, clean. It talks about being arrayed in white robes because they're washed with the blood of the Lamb. That's the song of redemption. It's a song of praise, but it's also a song of commitment. It's a song of walking. The new song is one that can be sung only by people who have experienced it. It's interesting, you see the contrast between the Old Testament and the New Testament, the way that it talks about this. So in Psalms and in Isaiah, it says, you need to do this. You need to sing this new song, and this is why. Because Christ is coming. Because he's going to be doing this work for you. Well, in Revelation, there's no command. It just says they sang it. They sang the new song. And why could they sing it? They sang it because they were redeemed. And that's the difference between the song of the Old Testament and the song of the New Testament. The one had to be commanded. You do this. And the other one is an expression of a changed life. And that is also the song of the redeemed. It comes from within. It's the true expression of Christ in us. And as we look at our music, it's important that we realize that part of good music is recognizing that expression. And is this expression truly coming from a heart that's willing to follow God? Or am I simply trying to consume something that gives me maybe a false sense of peace? So the song of the redeemed, first of all, and like I said, this is in many ways, these are some very practical things here. But I like to realize that the principles that are set forward in the song of the redeemed follow through all the little practical things. That principle is unmoved. And in music, first of all, I'm not an expert. I certainly am not an oracle of God. And there's many, many more talented and more qualified people than myself. And it's a touchy subject, and it's something that I'm scared to talk about because there are many opinions on music. People feel strongly about music, and we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. Those of you who have been in my rudiments class in Bible school, this is going to be just a refresher course for you on many points because you've heard me say many of these things before, and we've talked about them. And in 3 weeks of Bible school, we don't exhaust the subject, so we're certainly not going to this morning. So there are things that I'm simply going to have to leave out for lack of time and so forth. So I ask you to give me grace in my humanity and in my imperfections. I won't say everything perfectly, and I won't have time to give all sorts of qualifying statements for everything. So I ask for grace of that. I won't be able to give all the aspects of every point that are used. But my desire this morning is to be used of God. I don't have a personal agenda here. I'm not trying to give my opinion. I'm trying to find my way through music. I love music. I love listening to music. I love singing. And so this is a very personal subject for me, because it's something that I'm finding my way through. Now, as we've already seen in the little exercise that we did here at the beginning, music is different than conversation. If I see two people having a conversation, and I go up to one of them afterwards and I say, you know, what were you guys talking about? You might say something like this. Well, the guy I was talking to wants to take you out for lunch. When that's actually not what he said. What he may have said was something like this. Hi, how was your week? I enjoyed going for a walk with my pet aardvark last evening. Did you know that tomorrow's Joseph's birthday? Do you think we should do something special for him? I was thinking maybe a check for $1,000 or a new car. Or maybe he'd enjoy if we took him out to eat. So your mind sorts through all the obvious absurdities and extra fluff that's going on and says, okay, he wants to take you out for lunch. And we do that without thinking about it, because our mind processes the information that comes in logically. And we have these little file cabinets in our brain that we open up and we pull out these little files that say, okay, this makes sense, this makes sense. Yeah, this was clearly humor. And we come out the other end with a concise rendition of what the person actually meant. And generally, we're right. So, you know, from this conversation that you had, you pulled out the one essential thing, and you say this is what he said, even though those aren't the exact words that he said. But that is what he meant. And we do that very logically with conversation and information that we process. When we read a book, we do the same thing. We're reading through and we see something that, whoa, that doesn't make sense. I've read how many other places that say something totally different, and you know, my own experience has been different, and I talked to this person about it and they said something different, so you know, I'm going to view this little bit of information with extreme suspicion unless something clearly shows me otherwise. And that's a logical process that your brain goes through, and the older you get, the more files you have in your file cabinet, the more logical, hopefully, we process information. Well, the interesting thing about music is that it bypasses that whole logic center of your brain. It comes up to those file cabinets in there, and it just jumps clean over them. And so the normal checks and balances that we have to process information that comes in are totally useless, because music goes to our emotions. Music, like I said, jumps that logic center, and it goes straight to our emotions. I'm going to do another little exercise here with you. Go back to that song, Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee. Is the word as in the first verse of Joyful, Joyful, We Adore Thee? Yep, it is. Right there towards the end of the second line. Hail thee as the sun above. So, a couple interesting things you probably did. One is you didn't sing the song in your head at the same speed as which you normally sing it. You probably weren't going, joyful, joyful. You were probably going, joyful, joyful, we adore thee, God. You don't do that with conversation. If somebody talks to you and then somebody else asks you to repeat what they said, you don't go back through the whole list of their what they said. Hi, how are you? Yes, we have a hard working home. We pulled this that little bit out. Why don't we do that with music? Well, it's because part of the way that our brain works is it takes those sound bites of music and it puts them in there in chunks. Boom, 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 boom. And we stick all the chunks together and we have this song. So the other thing you did, unless you're unusual, is that you didn't stop when you got to the word as. You didn't say, hail thee as, oh, there it is. You said, hail thee as the sun above. You had to finish out that little chunk. And that's an interesting thing that music does to your brain. And I'm telling you this simply to illustrate again the point that music is an emotional thing that doesn't go through the logic centers of our brain. So when we're looking at the music that we listen to, we need to remember that, because it's difficult when we're listening to a song to look at it logically and to actually say, is this doctrinally sound? Is this song really the song of the redeemed? When we're listening to a song, it's very difficult to do that because those file cabinets are closed and the song has jumped clean over them. So again, that little exercise was simply to help illustrate that point again, that music, we process it differently. Music affects us in a different way than reading affects us. It affects us in a different way than preaching or hearing somebody tell you their life experience or giving you advice on something. It affects us in a different way than that does. So what are those ways, and how can we redeem them to God? Well, one of the things that I often hear when people talk about music, they say, why is it so complicated? 1 Chronicles 16, verse 9 says, sing unto him, sing psalms unto him, talk ye of all his wondrous works. Sounds so easy and straightforward there, doesn't it? Well, then why is it complicated? Why are there so many different opinions on music? Because there are. In a congregation this size, in a group where there's three people talking together, there are multiple opinions. So there's many different opinions and ideas of what's good music, what is tasteful music, what's acceptable music, what is moral music, what is entertaining music, children's music, worshipful music, uplifting music, and is it good or is it bad? There's many different opinions and ideas. One thing that people often ask is, well, why can't I just listen to music that makes me feel good? And we've already looked a little bit about that and the way that it affects your emotions, but we'll look at that a little bit more here. Another question we often ask ourselves is, why does anyone care what I listen to? Is it their problem? Well, yes, because it makes a difference in your life, and they care about you, and so it makes a big difference. And it also makes a big difference to God, because God is to be the focus of the song of the redeemed. Why? Another thing we often ask is, why is music a subject that's so hard to understand? Sometimes I think maybe we overcomplicate it. Or sometimes people say, well, I don't like music anyhow, so this is going to be a boring message for me. So I'll do my best not to let it be boring, maybe even sing a solo for you. The other thing to think about is that music is important to God. And I talked about that a little bit last Sunday, the things that God values. Music is going to be in heaven. I hate to say this, but actually I don't. You better start liking it, because if you're in heaven, you're going to be doing it for a long, long time. Because that's what it says we're going to be doing. So we're going to be singing. So first of all, I'd like to look at the emotional impact that music has on us. James 5:13 says, is any among you afflicted? Let him pray. Is any merry? Let him sing psalms. So there's a direct correlation, even in the Bible, between our emotions and music. I've already talked about how music bypasses the logical center of our brains, goes straight to the emotional. If we've experienced something negative in our lives, we have that phrase, once bitten, twice shy, you don't want to do it again. Well, with music, we don't do that. We will repeatedly listen to music that is very negative. We will repeatedly expose ourselves to music that's bad for us. Why? Again, it's because we're not processing it right. We're not realizing what it actually does to us. And that's also part of the beauty of music. That's what triggers the emotions, these feelings of nostalgia, feelings of calm, feelings of invigoration and determination. But that same medium triggers feelings of anger and hatred and disobedience. So clearly there are differences in music. And partly because of that, or actually largely because of that, we have these strong opinions on music. And we say things like, I like that song. Don't say that song's not nice. Or I love this arrangement. Or I can't stand that style. We have very strong reactions to music. Again, often because it goes to our emotions and it bypasses some of the filters that we normally use. And that's one reason why I can't just listen to music that makes me feel good. Because if all I'm doing is going by feel-good emotions, I'm going to listen to music that is just always the same kind. It's got this ba-bum, 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 you know, and I feel good about that. And that's not actually music that's upbuilding, and it's not a true expression of the redeemed. Because redemption is a walk, isn't it? It's not just that, hey, hallelujah, everything's feeling so good right now. So that's why it's important to recognize that as a fallacy, that idea that I can just listen to music that feels good and it's okay. Now, emotion, so I've said how this affects your emotion. Emotion isn't bad. And I'm not, don't go away from here and say that, oh, Jonathan said that music's bad because it affects your emotions. That's not what I'm saying at all. Emotion is not bad. God created emotion. Man can distort or corrupt emotions. Love is a prime example. How often does the Bible speak about love and the love of God and the love God has toward us? 2 Thessalonians 2:16 says, "Now our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God, even our Father which hath loved us and hath given us everlasting consolation and good hope through grace, comfort your hearts and establish you in every good word and work." Love is important. We have the, you know, John 3:16. God so loved the world that he gave his only son. And it's one of the pillars of Christianity. God exemplifies love. He commands us to love each other. But love can be corrupted. 1 Timothy 6, verse 10 says, "For the love of money is the root of all evil, which while some coveted after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through with many sorrows." 1 John 2:15 says, "Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him." And so here's bad love. And so we say, wait, I'm confused. I thought love was a good thing. Well, right love is a good thing. Bad love is a bad thing. And so the same applies in emotions and in music. There are good emotions. There are negative emotions. Music that drives good emotions is positive. Music that drives negative emotions isn't. And here's where we often kind of do this little side slip thing. So we understand that. When I read those verses to you, nobody was disagreeing with me. I mean, you knew that before I read those verses. But then when I say something like, well, just because that music feels good and uplifts your spirit doesn't mean it's good, then you say, oh, wait a minute. And that's our natural tendency. We don't apply the same rubric to our music as we do to other areas of our lives, and we need to. So examine the emotions that you feel when you're listening to a song. There's nothing wrong, and I want to be clear on this too, with having your spirit uplifted by music. But if that uplifting goes away as soon as the song is done, that means it was not an expression of a redeemed heart being uplifted to God. That means the music was affecting your emotions. When the music stopped, there was nothing left. And all good feelings went away. So if you need to be constantly listening to upbeat music or music with an, you know, upbeat beat in order to feel positive, there's an emptiness inside. That's not the song of the redeemed. It's a shallow, distorted emotion. It's euphoria, where you just feel good, but there's no real reason why you feel good, and then the outside influence is shut off, and here I am back in the dumps again. Now, music, I want to be clear on this again. Music can uplift you, and it can do it properly, but it must be an expression of a redeemed heart, realizing that God is the source of joy, and even in the difficult circumstances that I'm in, He can lift me up to himself, and I can be uplifted. And then when I'm done listening to that uplifting song, I feel closer to God, and I continue to feel uplifted. That's good. But if we're just on a high when we listen to music and that high drops as soon as we're done, then we get a false peace because our emotions are soothed rather than our spirit being brought closer to God. And another interesting little scientific fact is that singing together, whether in a choir or in a congregational setting like this, is proven to raise your serotonin levels. And serotonin is the hormone that leads to the feelings of oneness and group cohesion, team building exercises that different people do. It's intended to raise your serotonin levels. Well, singing does that naturally. You think that's by accident? I don't think so. I think God understood that when we get together and sing, it knits us. And it's important, and it's good, which is why you guys need to show up at chorus practice. And it's also why it's important to participate in singing at church. Because, like it or leave it, it's good for you. So, to close that point out, just understanding that music does have an emotional impact. And that emotional impact isn't bad. So be involved in your singing. Participate from the heart. And then allow God to run those pure emotions that he will give you from singing. The next thing I want to talk about is the physical impact that singing has on you, or that music has on you. Isaiah 35, verse 6 says, "Then shall the lame man leap as an hart, and the tongue of the dumb sing. For in the wilderness shall waters break out, and streams in the desert." And many studies have been done that illustrate the physical impact of various genres of music. From rats to plants to ice crystals, they played different kinds of music to it, and dramatic results. In one study with rats, they played soothing music, classical style music. Everything was hunky-dory. They played rock and rap and hip-hop, which, by just for information, those are classified as violent. That's classified as violent music, especially some forms of it. So when I talk about violent music, just so you know, that's in that classification. So they played this violent music. And you know what the rats did? They ate each other. And that's not just me saying it. That was a scientific study. They played music to plants with the same results. Music with clear, and I'll talk about timing here in a bit, but music with clear timing, classical style music, regular music, plants grew fine. Some people say they flourish, some people say they just grow the same. But either way, it was no negative effect. Violent music, plants started to wilt. Same other circumstances, but the music was different. It actually affected the plants. They did it to ice crystals. A Japanese researcher played music to buckets of water, and the room was, it was a cold temperature, and as this music was being played to these buckets of water, they gradually froze. And then he examined the ice patterns later. The music that was classical easy cadence music, beautiful hexagon and pentagon and when you look at a snowflake and it has all these perfect little patterns, that's what it looked like. And the violent music, it was all these little jagged, sharp edges, no discernible pattern whatsoever. The whole thing was just kind of distorted, frozen in this contortion. Studies have also showed that people who consistently listen to these violent types of music have higher tendencies towards suicide, toward violence towards women, towards just general disregard for human life. The truth is that God has built you with rhythm. You've got rhythm built into your brain. Now, some people have a very clear, natural sense of rhythm. When you're singing a song, and you teachers know if you're trying to teach children a song and you have them clapping along with it. Some children, they got it right away. And others, it's kind of, it's a little bit harder, and And that carries through into adulthood too. Some people it's easy to find that rhythm, and others it's just a little bit more difficult. But the truth is, you have rhythm. If I would ask one of you to suddenly stand up and say, Kevin, tell me something in Ukrainian. That's difficult. I've had people do that to me before. You know, they say, you know, they discover you speak a different language. They're like, oh, say something in that. What do you say? And you stutter and stammer. Whereas if somebody says, tell me what you would do if you had $1 million. Well, it doesn't take more than a second or two of thought, and you can kind of, you know. And, tell me something about your favorite teacher. And, oh, yeah. And the way that we talk, we have kind of a rhythm when we talk. If we're talking about something that we're unfamiliar with, we stutter, we stammer, we kind of, you know, we lose our rhythm. But if it's a subject we're familiar with or we enjoy, we have a natural cadence to the way that we talk. Different people's cadence and rhythm is different. But next time you're having just a free-flowing conversation with somebody, notice it. People tend to talk somewhat in a rhythm. We walk in a rhythm. That's why we notice if somebody has a limp. It's subconscious. I mean, we don't think about it. I don't think about the fact that, you know, okay, he's walking in a rhythm, he's walking in a rhythm. But when there's all of a sudden somebody who isn't and they have a limp, we notice that. Because our brains are programmed to feel that rhythm. Life is a rhythm. Sun rises, sun sets. People are born, people die. There's, you know, plants grow, plants die. Spring comes, winter comes. And it's a rhythm, and we feel that. And music, for hundreds of years, was built around that concept, that there are rhythms, that there are expectations of reward. So we sing a song, and joyful, joyful, we adore thee is a prime example. I'm just going to show you here of expectation and reward. So one thing that Beethoven did was he didn't bring it to a full chord conclusion until the very last chord. Almost at the end of each score, you're almost there, but not quite. And so it leads you on into the next one, which is what drives that sort of a cheerful, expectant thing. And then at the end, we come to this nice, solid chord at the end, and everybody feels like, yes, we've made it home. And it feels good. And many of our songs are built that way. If you notice, when we're learning a new song, often we kind of struggle through it. We get to the last couple notes, and everybody, dun-dun, you know, because we know that those last couple chords are solid. And we know, you know, there's usually a few of them that they're right there. And that's built on your brain's natural expectation and reward. You work through something and you're rewarded. Well, much of modern music goes directly against that. And it stretches out this anticipation. And instead of bringing it to a natural conclusion with a natural rhythm, it breaks it. So we do something like da 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 da, and we're constantly, whoa, you know, we're not sure. Just when our brains think we're catching the rhythm, it leaps into something else, and we reach the end of the song exhausted. And what happens scientifically is your adrenal glands are firing like mad because there's some kind of excitement going on. And the longer it goes, the less it understands it. And so the more it fires to make sure you are ready for whatever it is that comes. And you get to the end of the song, and you still don't know, but it's done now. And you're all fired up, and people are all ready to go. And then we wonder, why are people so paranoid? Why are they always looking for a fight? Well, the truth is their music fuels that. Because they're so keyed up. The you know, listening to rock, pop, rap, hip hop, it never, you know, you get to the end of the song and you're still waiting for something to happen. And the next thing you know, somebody cuts you off in traffic. So what do? You make something happen. And that is a clear physical impact that music has on us that we don't think about. And the unfortunate thing is that many of those rhythms and that drop timing is sneaked into contemporary Christian music. And so we listen to a song and we say, hey, I like this song. I'm excited. You know, I don't know why I'm so jumpy, but I'm excited. And it's negative. It's a negative thing. But don't anybody dare tell me that that music's bad. Because I feel good. But that's why I say, you know, this in many ways is a very practical message. And so I was a little bit unsure about bringing it on a Sunday morning because, but I didn't know when else to. But these are scientific things that are happening to our minds when we're listening to music. And I think it's important to recognize those things so that we know what's going on. And we know that hymns and classical music, one reason that it is restful and relaxing and invigorating versus euphoric is that it follows your brain's natural rhythms. Another interesting side note is that if you're learning something, and this is something I read years and years ago, it said, because I've never been super proud of my memory, I have a tendency to forget things, I'm absent-minded, and I forget numbers especially, it's hard for me, and I was trying hard to figure out ways that I could remember, like, dates and numbers. And so I was reading these books on memory, and one thing that came up over and over again is it said, as you're memorizing something, listen to some Bach or Beethoven. So why is that? Well, it's because it's in this clear 4-4 timing. Da 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 da. And it's a natural rhythm for your brain. And so as you're learning, you're doing this thing in your brain. And now I experienced when I was in some countries in Southeast Asia and Middle East at madrasas where they're learning the Quran, they do it in a cadence. They sit cross-legged on the floor with the Quran in front of them, and they sway back and forth like this, and they repeat this line to themselves, and da-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun-da-da-dun. And that's exactly what they're doing. And they can memorize the entire Quran that way. Because it's part of your body's natural rhythm. So I say these things to help us realize that when we listen to that kind of music, it's not just a thing of, this music makes me feel good. This is actually can be something negative for you physically. And we are both fed and expressed by the music that we listen to. Now, being influenced is right, and being expressive is right, if it's done correctly. Now, try to speed up here. So, another thing about music, before I move on to the spiritual impact, is the music that you listen to, and I think, and the reason, one reason I think this is important is because it hits home to me pretty hard, the volume at which you listen to your music affects you. And the reason is this. Your music goes to your emotional centers, right? The louder the music is, the more those centers fire up until it blocks everything. So even normally, listening to a song at a quiet volume, there's enough other sensory things that go on that we can still process some logic. We can listen to quiet music and read a book at the same time. We cannot listen to loud music and read a book at the same time and process what's going on. They have done MRIs of people who have, you know, at different volumes of music, and at loud volumes, it so completely fires up your brain that nothing else gets in. So that's why people listen to music on headphones when they're working out, because that's all your body knows. You're whatever they're doing, you know, pushing weights or running, whatever, their muscles are screaming for relief, but their brain doesn't know it because all it's hearing is this loud music going on. So it has no idea that their joints are about to pop. But then here's the interesting thing about it. You listen to a song at that volume consistently, that's always the volume you hear it in your head. So they also did MRIs after they took the headphones off, stuck the guys back in the machine, whoop, closed the door, and said whatever the song was. They shouted in there, la, 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 la. And guess what their brains did? Boom! Fired up with the same intensity. They were listening to that music again in their heads with the same volume. Everything else was blocked out, and they weren't listening to anything. So that's why sometimes people have such strong reactions. You say, "Ooh, that's not a very good song." "Oh, yes, it is! Oh, I love that song." It's because if suddenly their brains were listening to it at full volume, all logic centers were overridden, and it was pure emotion. So, young people, take that to heart. Listen to your music at reasonable volumes and be careful with your earbuds. It's more than just blowing out your eardrums that are at risk here. Not saying that earbuds are bad, but I'm just saying that if you consistently listen to music at very loud volumes, it can actually seriously damage your perception of music itself. And these are secular studies. These weren't Christians doing this trying to prove that music was bad. That was just scientists doing that, saying, this is what happens. Well, I'd like to look at spiritual impact here. 1 Corinthians 14:15 says, "What is it then? I will pray with the Spirit, and I will pray with the understanding also. I will sing with the Spirit, and I will sing with the understanding also." So is it possible for one part of us to be affected and nothing else? Can I smash my finger and my brain not be awash in horror and my legs not jump around while my hand flops about in pain? Can my boss coming up to me and telling me in serious tones that need to have a word with you in the office not result in high blood pressure and stress and wobbly knees, dry throat? So we know in a regular sense that if one part of us is affected, all of us is affected. But sometimes we try to say that music is different, that, you know, even though this music does this negative thing to me, it doesn't actually do this negative thing to me. And music isn't different. If negative emotions are being pumped into our ears, our spiritual life will be affected. If wrong physical impulses are being promoted through my earbuds or speakers, then that will affect my spiritual life. It says in 1 Corinthians there, it says, with the Spirit and understanding. So emotions affect my physical well-being, affect my spiritual well-being. And the inverse is also true. My spiritual well-being affects my emotional well-being, affects my physical well-being. My spiritual life will guide the choices I make physically. It will guide my emotional responses. And my spiritual life is both influenced and evidenced by my music. And I think that's an important piece to realize, that you are influenced by the music you listen to. It's also an expression. But it's not only an expression, and it's not only an influence. It can be both. But in the influence side of it, it's difficult to achieve that victory in Jesus if we're listening to song like Party Rock Anthem. And often, booming speakers and bobbing heads are evidences of an empty heart. I've got a long way to go yet, so I think I'm just going to close with this for this morning come back and pick this up another time, because I don't want to rush through it. I think it's an important enough subject, and it's relevant enough that I don't want to just jump through it. So I'm just going to go back and recap a little bit. In thinking of the song of the redeemed, in the way that music influences us, in the way that it's an expression, we can use that in positive ways. We can use music to influence people for right, or influence ourselves for right. We can use that expression of redemption, of redemption in Christ, to both buoy ourselves up in difficult times in life, and also to be an uplift to others who might be feeling discouraged, or maybe someone who has not experienced redemption. There is no testimony as great as the testimony of a changed life. And one of the beautiful ways that is expressed is in song. So sing the song of the redeemed, think about that. Think about what your music is doing to you, and what you can do positively with music. Let's kneel for prayer.